Hello, it's Friday, 16th of October. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we're taking an aerial journey across Southeast Asia's aviation landscape.
And we promise it will be more meaningful than a flight to nowhere. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, things certainly seem to be moving with lots of travel-related announcements, gossip and rumours over the past 7 days. But the region's aviation industry is still struggling after months of international inactivity.
Yep, certainly a lot of tough challenges ahead for both airlines and airports. And we've chosen six countries today which have dominated the air travel developments over the past week. But before that, Hannah...
And of course, we've got two big news stories, which we'll come to later in the show as well. But first, let's have a look at some of the stats then for aviation for Southeast Asia for this week. So we've had about 4.07 million flights this week, down from 10.9 million on the 20th of January. So as a whole, Southeast Asia is operating at around 62.6% of its pre-COVID capacity. But it has the second worst recovery rate of the 10 regions covered by OAG, behind Southwest Pacific at minus 71.7%. And it's also pretty unfavourable when you compare it to Northeast Asia, which is only down minus 21.2%, and even South Asia, which is down minus 50.6%.
Yeah, those two markets, Northeast Asia obviously is slightly skewed by China and South Asia by India. And if you look at across the world, there are four Asian markets in the world's top 10 for air capacity this week. China remains at number one, Japan is at number three, India number four, and the only Southeast Asia member in that list is Indonesia at number five. But if you look at it specifically at airlines, it's been quite a good month for Vietnam. Both Vietjet and Vietnam Airlines rank second and third globally for adding capacity since the first week of September, so over the last month. Now, Vietjet has added an extra 126.6% of capacity, and Vietnam Airlines 88.4%. So those augur quite well for whatever happens next.
Definitely, yeah. I think we can see a good recovery now coming post-second wave in Vietnam. So, should we move on to country-specific updates then? And I think the first country that we really have to cover is Malaysia, isn't it? There's so much that's been happening in the Malaysian aviation industry in the past week or so.
Yeah, there's so much that's been happening in the aviation industry, and there's been so much that's happening in Malaysia as well itself. We've had the return of a partial lockdown in some areas, here in KL being one of them, the state of Selangor, and also Putrajaya. Restrictions on travel to Sabah and Sarawak, and to Labuan as well. And these are obviously because the case numbers of the coronavirus have started to increase again after being pretty well managed over the last 6 months. We've started to see daily case rates, you know, in the 500s and 600s, which is so far away from where the country was. And we've also started to see a few deaths as well.
So, I mean, the biggest news that is really coming out of Malaysia, actually, it's hard to know where to start, but I guess the biggest one is with Malaysia Airlines. So Malaysia Airlines, it was revealed last week, and we talked about this on the pod last week, were writing to their lessors asking them to... give them a break, basically help them out. But since then, of course, we've had the government saying they're not going to help out or give any additional funding to Khazanah to help support Malaysia, that Khazanah's going to have to find those funds itself. We've had rumors coming out that Firefly, you know, could become the only national airline. They might potentially kind of close down Malaysia Airlines and focus on Firefly. And in fact, they had news that came out that they're going to the Firefly, which tends to be the regional airline. They tend to operate with ATR planes, flying the short domestic routes around Malaysia. But they're going to resume operations with jet airplanes in Q1 next year. And they're going to add 10 narrow-body jetliners to its fleet in phases, which will serve the domestic market, the ASEAN market, and APAC markets out of Penang, which is quite an interesting move. And that Malaysia Airlines Group itself said that this gives them room to focus on Malaysia Airlines network serving the premium market.
We've discussed this before, that some of the bigger airlines the legacy carriers are looking at a future which will be very much based on low-cost flying. And so those that have low-cost subsidiaries are really looking at how they can shift some of their business from their main carriers to the low-cost business. With Malaysia Airlines, there's a bigger overlay as well. This week, the group CEO of the Malaysia Airlines group gave a video message which was targeted at staff, the three airlines, which are Malaysia Airlines, Firefly and Mass Wings. And he said, reiterating your point there, Hannah, that the company is currently in very deep and serious negotiations with lessors, creditors, partners and shareholders. We are working very hard to convince them to work with us to restructure our costs. This is our plan A, is what he called it. He says, if this fails, we will have to look at winding up Malaysia Airlines, and we would probably have to consider shutting it down and grow as a new airline under Firefly and Mass Wings. This might not be the ultimate name, however. We would consider changing it to reflect Malaysia. So you kind of look at that and you think, well, Malaysia Airlines itself is in such a big state, is in such a difficult state that it's going to be wound up. It will shift the focus initially into its low-cost airlines, but ultimately, basically, try to rebuild the airline around one of its other licenses.
Yeah, it's an interesting, a really interesting move. And, you know, we've always said that Malaysia Airlines is an airline that is really struggling at the moment and has been struggling for many, many years. But I think COVID has just made it a million times worse, the recovery. So it really needs a shake-up regardless. But it will be interesting to see if it's plan A or plan B.
Yeah. And what this will actually mean as well. So Khazanah, which is the sovereign wealth fund here, which owns the group, it's the sole shareholder, and it is chaired by the Prime Minister of Malaysia. It said that if implemented successfully, Firefly has the potential to become the national airline. So this, you know, the story is being told from the same angle across the spectrum here. But also the CEO said, with regarding job security, I can make no promises. And he referenced back to 2015 when Malaysia Airlines went through its previous turnaround and 6,000 job losses were incurred at that time. And he reiterated how painful that process was, but his words were quite strong. I can make no promises on job security going forward.
I mean, and on that note, we've seen other airlines in Malaysia this week also making job cuts. So Malindo Airways, which is part of the Lion Air Group from Indonesia, is planning to cut 2,200 jobs and reduce its fleet size to 11 planes only to keep the company afloat. So that's a big move. I think that they hadn't really made big cuts up till now, but clearly they can't sustain the size of their fleet, the size of their employees, and they're not seeing an immediate recovery coming anytime soon. So yeah, it makes sense.
I agree. And also that airline is you know, it's a joint venture. It's part owned by Lion Air from Indonesia. We'll come to them in a moment, but they're also struggling as well. They're having some difficulties in their home market. Obviously, Malaysia for them is a secondary market. So it's not looking particularly good for Malindo at the moment.
No. And then we've got AirAsia. So AirAsia, again, we had one of these. And this reminds me of a few months ago, we had a story come out. Nikkei Asia was reporting that Malaysia government had approved a 1 billion ringgit loan for AirAsia, which then the finance ministry has turned around and said is not true. Something quite similar happened with Malaysia Airlines, I think, a few months ago as well. It seems to be a lot of jumping the gun in the media at the moment, particularly when it comes to funding for airlines here.
I think we know that AirAsia are pretty good at playing the media and trying to push their agenda through the media to try and jolt the system a little bit. And that seems to maybe what's happened here. I was listening into Karen Chan from AirAsia. She spoke at the Skift Asia Forum yesterday. Obviously, she was very bullish about the near future, even though, you know, we are under this CMCO at the moment, this partial lockdown. She said at present, AirAsia is flying between 60 and 70% of its domestic capacity, and it wants to increase that to 70 to 80% in Q4. She added that the Thai AirAsia franchise is currently operating at around about 100% of its domestic capacity, and that Indonesia and Philippines will scale up in Q4. So there must be this sense that things are starting to happen and there will be more flights towards the end of the year, which, you know, will be a lifeline for AirAsia.
Yeah, that's definitely encouraging, isn't it? I mean, and of course, AirAsia are now positioning themselves as a lifestyle group, aren't they? So last week they launched their super app. So yeah, they've combined basically all of their services into one platform, which, you know, makes sense from a synergy point of view and everything else. And they are kind of repositioning themselves as this super app technology company rather than as an airline. Like you said, they're good at playing the media, and this is a whole other line, I suppose, that will help them to get investment. It's perhaps more sexy to invest in a technology company than it is to invest in an airline right now.
Yeah, absolutely. She referenced that quite clearly, and she said that one of the things that they're really pushing is they now have 17 business units under this app, this super app platform. Mm-hmm. And she said they have a 75 million database of customers. So basically what they're going to try and do is convert the customers to buy other products, other services. They don't actually have to acquire new customers. They're just going to try and convert the ones that they already have. And I think you're absolutely right with your point there, Hannah. You know, this actually will play quite well in terms of their negotiations to raise more funds. It's something that certainly Malaysia Airlines doesn't have. The problem that both airlines have, well, all airlines have at the moment, is when they're asking their creditors or their lessors to actually take a big cut on the money that they are owed, is that lessors and creditors are quite unwilling to do that right now, because you don't want to set a precedent. You know, all airlines around the world are going to be asking them to do this. At some point, you're going to have to draw the line and say, no, we can't do it. And that will mean that some airlines will most likely perish.
Should we move on to a slightly cheerier story?
Let's move on to the biggest story of the week, Hannah.
Yes. So this is, we'll move to Singapore, and hopefully many of our listeners will have heard it, that the good news that Singapore and Hong Kong are all set to sign a bilateral air bubble with each other. And now this air bubble is not just for business travel, but for leisure travel. So if it comes off, it will be the first leisure travel bubble that's been established.
Yeah, I mean,
the region so far.
The phraseology is quite interesting. No restriction on travel purpose. I mean, that's unprecedented in recent months, isn't it? That basically is saying, although we don't know the full details, they're going to be fleshed out over the next few weeks. So it's not actually going to happen imminently. But this fact that there is no restriction on travel purpose means that, like you said, it could be business, it could be leisure, it could be visiting family and friends, it could be migration, it could be anything.
Yeah, it's, you know, for me, I think it's fantastic news, and it's what we've all just been hoping for, this first sign of a leisure travel bubble. And there's no quarantines, there's no stay home notices. The only real requirement is, of course, you're going to need a negative test before you depart, potentially one when you arrive. They need to iron out those details now. But yeah, this is amazing news. It's finally progress.
Yeah, and the Singapore Transport Minister, who we like to quote because he does give some great quotes, he said yesterday, both of our cities have low incidence of COVID-19 cases and have put in place robust mechanisms to manage and control COVID-19. Now, they're calling this an air travel bubble. But if you listen to what he said there, that really, really resonates with what the prime ministers of Australia and New Zealand said 5 or 6 months ago when they initially wanted to set up an air bubble. You know, it's the same terminology. It's about being COVID safe. It's about having two destinations that have managed the virus particularly well and that can travel between themselves. So you're looking there at something that's quite positive. Now, one of the things that, Hannah, I'm going to throw this one at you, is that one of the things they're saying is they're going to iron out the details of this over the next few weeks. Now, we know for sure, because it's been reported and sources have said this as well, that Hong Kong and China are currently in negotiations to open the border between China and Hong Kong. So does this mean that Chinese travellers may be able to visit Singapore via Hong Kong?
Well, I was thinking that earlier, yeah. I mean, I presume at this point they would have restrictions, and then they would say, they would check that you are a resident of Hong Kong, right? I think that they would have to do that. But yes, there is that potential that somehow Chinese nationals could enter Singapore via Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But I would imagine initially, at least, they would try to have kind of ways to catch that.
I would imagine they will start relatively low, and they've both parties to this have said that they can scale it up and adjust the number of dedicated flights upwards or downwards, or even in the worst case scenario, suspend it if there are some COVID-19 situations on the flights or either in the two cities. But one of the things I thought I'd throw in that aspect about the Chinese travelers is I actually looked at the stats between Hong Kong and Singapore. Now, obviously, they're the two biggest connective hubs in our region. But actually, the flights between them are not as frequent as we perhaps would imagine. So last year, in 2019, the Hong Kong to Singapore route, so from Hong Kong to Singapore, was the 10th busiest air route in Asia Pacific, according to OAG. And there were 3.78 million seats available on that route last year. But more interestingly, Hong Kong's routes to Taipei, Shanghai, Incheon, Manila were all busier. So was its route from Bangkok, so from Bangkok to Hong Kong. And in Singapore Changi's case, its routes from KL, Jakarta and Bangkok were all busier than from Hong Kong.
Yeah, like you say, it's interesting because I don't think that they are necessarily the top inbound markets for one another. But I guess what they both have in common right now is that they are both island nations, not able to really go on domestic travel anywhere else. So I do think if they are opening it up for leisure travel, travellers from both countries will be interested in visiting the other one simply to be able to get out.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And I also think that, you know, it also shows that what happened in 2019 is almost less relevant than ever now. You know, we're going to be seeing new trends. We're going to be seeing new developments. We're going to be seeing new ways of travel. We're going to be seeing new agreements between destinations. So it is a real reset, isn't it? This is great news. I 100% agree with you on that. But it kind of changes the landscape to what we've become used to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a survey at the moment for a client and talking to travel agents. And most of the time when I ask, what's the first country you think your travelers will go back to? Actually, the most common answer right now is wherever is COVID-free or wherever they're able to. So it's going to be very much down to where they can physically go, which will be pretty limited at the beginning.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's something we still have to wait and see. We don't know what the numbers will be, how they will cap it, how they will, you know, because if you're going to have the testing and that kind of thing, it's going to restrict the numbers of people that can fly. But just the fact that this is happening is it's the best news we've had, well, what, since March, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. So, I mean, some other Singapore aviation news that has come out, it's particularly revolving Changi airports and this Terminal 5 project that they were planning. So that has now is going to be on hold for 2 years whilst they're assessing the air traffic demand. And that also makes sense in the light of the fact that now Changi Airport has dropped from being the seventh busiest airport in the world down to the 58th. It has only direct flights to 49 cities worldwide. It's just flying 1.5% of its previous passenger numbers, which again, the transport minister will quote him, is called a deep crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't mean to set this up as a segue, but this kind of goes back to what I was just saying a minute ago about, you know, just how everything has changed over the last few months. Mm. And he himself said, the assumptions that went into Terminal 5 have totally changed. I don't have a prediction or a crystal ball to say what will happen to Terminal 5 and what will happen to global aviation in future. So we're really in that sort of era, aren't we? Singapore really wants to push the envelope. It's really got a grip of the virus. It's done very, very well over the last month. It really wants to open up its economy. It wants its people to be able to travel safely and securely, not in huge numbers yet, but, you know, it uses this word progressive and in a phased manner, wants to do these deals. But in terms of its infrastructure, it's very aware that Terminal 5 right now will not be viable for, will it ever be viable? But it certainly won't be in the next few years.
So should we hop over to a different country?
Yeah, and some more good news too.
Yeah, so this is the Philippines this time. And the good news that's come out from the Philippines this afternoon is that from October the 21st, Filipinos will be allowed to do non-essential outbound travel. So essentially, they could go on holiday somewhere. I mean, I guess the caveat is if that destination will allow Filipino travelers in. But yeah, again, that's really good news. And I imagine that the airlines there will be greeting this with a massive sigh of relief because both Philippine Airlines and Cebu Pacific right now are really struggling.
It's a good point that you mentioned there, Hannah, about, you know, where will they actually be able to go to? We'll come to that in a minute. There are a couple of moves around the region, but it's sort of that reverse of what Bali did, where Bali actually decided to open its borders to allow people in and then realized that nobody was actually able to come. Philippines, they'll actually have to be looking about where they can actually go to. But I have a feeling that things are going to move a little bit there. Once countries actually say that their travelers can go outbound, then maybe we will start to see, maybe not whole countries, but islands or, you know, certain small regions in Southeast Asia making some moves to make this charter flights, I would suspect, but, you know, in small numbers available for visitors who are actually able now to travel.
Yeah. I mean, and the airlines there are still, they're still waiting for funding. So the government had passed the Bayanihan to Recover as One Act, I think about a month ago now. But the airlines, as part of that airlines were meant to get some kind of recovery package, I think access to loans and so on. They're still waiting for that. They are still waiting to hear how they can get that. And on the other side of it, the government, the Philippine government, is still saying that local airlines have yet to submit the final loan plan. So it's hard to know quite what's going on there, I think, actually, with airlines saying the government hasn't told them what's going on. The government is saying the airlines haven't asked for the money officially yet. But what's clear is they need money. So even, you know, Cebu Pacific last week announced that they're looking to raise $500 million to help them get through it. You know, these airlines need the money quickly. The Philippine government has also made it clear that they are not willing to become the owners of another airline. They will do their part, but the private sector has to be the one that shoulders the majority of this responsibility to revive the airlines.
Yeah. So I've got a quick question for you here, Hannah. Looking at the details of what they have announced today, the outbound travel is for people with confirmed round-trip tickets. So you have to be able to prove that you are coming back to the Philippines. It's not just one way. You have to have adequate travel and health insurance and you have to have the necessary tourist visa. Now, this is for outbound travel. Do you think there's a test case, or do you think they will open up maybe Boracay or somewhere like that to inbound travel?
I don't think so at this point. You know, I think they are struggling enough to open up the country to itself.
Yeah.
I think for them to consider opening it up to inbound travellers would just be a step too far. I mean, they only opened up Boracay to domestic tourists, general domestic tourists, on the 1st of October. So they are far from kind of sorting out their procedures and getting everything in line. I think they're just going to let Filipinos go out, which is a strange move compared to some of the other governments in ASEAN who do seem to be trying to keep domestic travellers kind of captive, I guess, to stimulate domestic tourism and trying to capture that the spend that they would have spent outbound on domestic tourism. Whereas Philippines seem to have decided, no, we're just going to let them travel out. We'll see how it works.
So let's move on next on our tour is Indonesia. What's happening there, Hannah?
A small amount of movement there compared to Philippines or Singapore or Malaysia. But Garuda Indonesia have managed to secure a $68 million loan from Exim Bank. So it seems rather small, you know, Cebu Pacific, who are looking to raise $500 million. And this is a $68 million. So it's pretty small in comparison, but it's a little something. And the Indonesian government has recently, in their new omnibus bill, which has been pretty controversial this week, caused quite a lot of protests in Jakarta. But part of that omnibus bill was making life slightly easier for commercial airlines. So they've changed some regulations. They don't need to own at least 5 aircraft. That kind of thing should make it slightly easier for aviation and potentially longer term, you know, could open it up to more competition as well. You know, right now it's very much a duopoly between Garuda Indonesia and its group and the Lion Group. So it'd be interesting to see if any other airlines kind of take advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mentioned earlier Lion Air, and I was listening to a podcast interview with Brendan Sobey, the aviation consultant, the other day. And he was saying that Lion Air is having some real financial difficulties at the moment. And he referenced the fact that they've actually applied for a fourth airline license in case, in a similar situation to Malaysia Airlines, they have to close down their other airline and start again with a whole new operation.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that would be interesting to see what happens. They haven't confirmed whether that would be part of the Lion Air group or separate. But yeah, rumours definitely that they've applied for a new license. Yeah.
And you also referenced Garuda there, and they've just introduced their new livery. Did you see that? They've actually painted all their planes with face masks.
Masks. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Encourage travellers to wear masks. Yeah. Even our planes
and
masks.
They're beautifully designed as well, aren't they? They're not just face masks. They have lots of different sort of cultural references and symbolism. So they're beautifully done.
Where should we hop to? To Thailand, perhaps. And just a quick one there. I mean, of course, you've got this kind of ongoing saga with Thai Airways and its rehabilitation process, which is still ongoing. But another small positive story is actually Thai Vietjet. And unlike, I think, nearly all of the airlines in Southeast Asia, they are actually planning to add staff, aren't they? They're looking to add 300 staff between now and the end of December.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I referenced there earlier, you know, Thai Air Asia said that they're flying pretty high capacity at the moment as well. So the domestic market there is moving quite well, apparently. But, you know, we still don't know what's going to happen with inbound travel. But let's move on before we get involved in the the special tourist visa again. I think we've said enough about that in recent weeks.
Yeah.
So let's go to Vietnam. And an interesting development there this week is that tour operator Viet Travel has received a license to start its airline. It's been talking about this for a long time now, and it was expected to happen next year, but it's now got the license for Viet Travel Airlines, which will start flying on December the 18th. Now, there are some interesting factors about Viet Travel Airline. One, it's going to be wholly focused on the domestic market, whereas originally it was going to have an international component. It's only going to start with 3 aircraft and then 5 more by the 5th year. So it's going to start quite small. And it will mainly carry people on tours and charter flights, some commercial flights as well. It's going to be based in Phu Bai International Airport, and it's aiming to have 1 million passengers in the first year. And there's two things about this that strike me as quite interesting. One, it already organizes charter flights because it is a travel agency company. And it's entering a very competitive market. So it's going up against Vietnam Airlines, Vietjet, Jetstar Pacific, Vietnam Air Services, Bamboo Airlines, and Vietstar Airlines as well. But the fact that it has such high expectations of visitor numbers and it's only focusing on the domestic market, do you think that they have some inkling that there is going to be some inbound travel there?
You never know, they might do. I mean, Viet Travel is, of course, one of the largest travel agencies. I think it has links to the government. So it may well know something that the rest of us don't. Let's hope. And maybe we'll finish with Cambodia. Not a huge amount to report. You know, I think as we said a couple of weeks ago, the airlines there are still not really, you know, they still have very, very few flights, both domestic and international. But the piece of aviation news that's coming out is that the China-built Darasakor International Airport in Kokong province is almost ready to open, isn't it? It's scheduled to be operational mid-2021.
Yeah, it looks like, well, almost ready to operate. It's possibly slightly pushing the envelope a little bit because the terminal looks like it's built. The runway looks like it's built. There's still a lot of fit-out work to do. And I think they're going to actually start doing test flights towards the end of the year or early next year. But, you know, this is an interesting development for a number of reasons. One, Hannah, as you mentioned there, we said, what was it, last week or the week before, just how few flights there are for the 3 airports that currently exist in Cambodia. There's just not enough to go around at the moment. But then you look again at the details, and you referenced it there. You know, this is built by China. It's near the Gulf of Thailand. It's going to be specifically for charter or special flights. And so people will be coming in and out of from wherever, but you presume mostly from China. And then they can then fly on to other destinations such as Siem Reap or Sihanoukville. But this looks like a very, very sort of special purpose airport. It's not going to be a connective international airport in the sense that we know them elsewhere in the region.
No, this is very much focused entirely on the China market, isn't it? So it will be, you know, by the fact that they are still rushing to complete it, you know, that perhaps bodes well for the return of inbound Chinese tourists, or at least on charter flights.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that, you know, the way that this is being reported right now and the sort of time scales of the middle of next year, later next year, yeah, by then you would be expecting some Chinese charters to be able to come into Cambodia.
So I think that brings us to the end of this aviation edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. We hope you enjoyed the show. And as always, we'd love to read your feedback on what we said or what we missed out. So you can email us at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com. And look out for our daily travel insights and podcast news on LinkedIn, at the Southeast Asia Travel Show, and Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, meanwhile, you can catch up with all 45 of our previous episodes, which span the Southeast Asia Travel Show and the Friday Rewind Show, on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each platform.
So that's a wrap for this week. We're both off to dream of future flight escapes to real destinations. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye-bye.